session number 31693, reel 10.
Mr. Robson, reel 10. What were your first impressions of the Germans themselves?
That time, when we arrived, I mean, the people who worked in the barracks themselves anyway, they were quite friendly, no problems at all. And I remember the first night out, or the first day out, which was a Saturday, and we got on the bus, all dressed, and again we had to be dressed properly. We weren't allowed out in jeans. We had to have collar and tie on, were smartly dressed.
And could you wear civilian clothes?
Civilian clothes, yes, when we went out. If you've got to remember that the permanent pass was still in operation in those days, and we were inspected at the gate before we went out to make sure we were smartly dressed. We were given exactly the same as the Heathfield camp, given a number in the book and out book, reminded it that we were the representatives and we had to behave ourselves. And we would, the thing was as well, we actually were given what they call as BAFs, which the British Army Forces, or British Armed Forces, and there was money. You couldn't spend it in the German bars. You could only spend this in the NAFI, and there were, so you used to get your pay, and you used to be given. We used to always apply for whatever type of cash we wanted, marks, and also these BAFs. Now the BAFs were, as I say, paper money. And they're only to be spent in the NAFI. They had our local NAFI in camp, but when we went out on a Saturday, we used to go into a place called Reichkanzlerplatz, where we used to get off the tram, and there they had a big NAFI. And in that NAFI, and again, there was only British troops who were allowed to use it, and their families. Well, I must admit, a lot of girls used to hang about outside the NAFI because they had a cinema, we had a restaurant, and we had a bar in there. There was a bowling alley, and of course the girls, as I say, used to hang about outside to be taken in by one of the squaddies. So you got a date that way, and you could go take them in. And you were responsible for while they were in there, although they weren't allowed to spend any money because they weren't allowed to take any German marks. Although one or two people, if you ran out of BAFs, there used to be the old black market exchange, so you could get the BAFs, so you could spend it in the NAFI. And we had a good bar there, and I remember price wise, it was 6 pence for a glass of beer, and the beer we had was mainly Amstel, which was a Dutch beer. It was quite first time I'd ever drank it. It was quite pleasant, and the shorts, believe it or not, used to be 4 pence. It was cheaper than the beer. Brandy, rum, and of course that was 4 pence. Then there was the Coke on top, a bottle of Coke on top of that. I think the bottle of Coke was about, I don't know, about 4 pence as well. So a rum and Coke used to be around about, or brandy and Coke used to be about 8 pence. Absolutely crazy money. And you used to get a good meal in there, because it was an excellent restaurant, so you used to make a day of it. And at the end of the day, I mean, we didn't stay in there all day. We'd go out and visit a German pub. And I remember one we used to, which was used exclusively, really, for British squaddies, and it was called Stefani's. I'll never forget it as long as I live. And we had another one which was called Ozzy's Bar, and we used to go in between the two. And that was about, very rarely we used to go into the centre of Berlin, because in the centre of Berlin, as you can imagine, was very expensive. So we tended to stay away from Berlin. Let's say we're doing a little bit of sightseeing. So that was on a Saturday, and on a Sunday, really we didn't used to go out much, because again it was the start of a heavy week. So Saturdays was our day out in Berlin.
And the people, in general terms, what were they like?
People were absolutely excellent. I really must say they were. Because they knew what had happened during the Berlin airlift, and they appreciated what the Brits did. Yes, there was fights, as wherever you go, there are always confrontations. But mainly, we used to get confrontation with the Americans, because they used to come up to our and try and take over our bar at Stefani's. And I've got to admit, I was involved in one or two punch-ups and with the Americans in Stefani's, and was once arrested. But I wasn't charged, so, because fortunately the people in the bar who owned the bar, Stefani's owners, actually they said I had nothing to do with it. And I was actually attacked by the Americans, and but they came up the following week, and we drank together, and it was just put out as stupidity, and the old testosterone was going. But apart from that, but I always remember when I did get arrested. I'll never ever forget it as long as I live, because the first time I ever had a gun pointed at me by a German policeman. And after that, I behaved myself. I never got arrested again.
So you could move between your own sectors, but not the Russians, presumably.
Yes, there was movement into East. If I remember rightly, I think you were only allowed to go into East Germany as long as you provided information to go into East Berlin. There was two types of transport there, underground stations. One was called the U-Bahn, and that was mainly in Western. And there was the U-Bahn was actually blue, and the S-Bahn, which had yellow carriages, actually did run in West Berlin, but did a majority of their runs in East Berlin. So you got to be careful. You never got on a tram to go in, or not a tram, but an underground to go into East Berlin. You kept, I mean. I was only, just turned 20. I was 19, I think. I was 19. So I just turned 19, and I was very aware. And I didn't want to end up in... Because they did, actually, if anybody strayed over there, they did arrest them. But if they used to have official parties going into East Berlin. I was quite happy in West Berlin, so I never did get a trip into East Berlin.
But when you say official parties, how were they?
There would be runs into. You could go around there would be parties which would be run officially to take people in and show what it was like in East Berlin, the difference. And I saw some of it on the television, and. Later on you could see over the wall and you could see the difference. And Berlin, West Berlin Marks was highly sought after in East Berlin, and there was a thriving black market for East. I think it was somewhere the exchange rate, the official exchange rate was about three East Berlin marks for one West Berlin mark. That was the official rate, but you could get more. And you could always tell East Germans. When we first were there, there was freedom of movement between both sides. But I wasn't fascinated going into it. I wasn't interested in going at that time. It was later on, of course, when the wall was put on. Well, go through it and that. But up until then, there was freedom of movement. Although the East Berliners, some worked in West Berlin, they had to have a special pass to get through onto the West Berlin side. So there was a bit of freedom of movement, but I wasn't interested in going over the other side.
What about the French then? Did you come across the French?
The French, yes. We went up to the French side, and their zone was the other side of Spandau. We had a little bit of movement with them. We played football against them, the same as the Americans. We did baseball against the Americans as well. We played football against the French. They used to tend to stay within the French sector, although some used to come up. They didn't used to come up to our side of the line, as we would say. This tended to stay on that side. The French weren't that well paid, by the way. I mean, the French army, they didn't have a lot of money to spend. But a lot of the French actually, you never saw many French in civilian clothes. They're nearly always in uniform.
Did you have an additional allowance for being abroad?
Yes, we had an overseas allowance, and we had a local overseas allowance in Berlin. Because Berlin was a little bit more expensive than West Germany, because everything had to be shipped into Berlin via the goods trains and what have you. So yes, but you got to, you know, the local beers. And one of the local beers, I'll never forget, was a brew called Schulteis. And that was brewed in Spandau. And that was an excellent beer. Really was a good beer.
Do you remember what your allowance addition was for Berlin? On top of your basic pay?
I can't remember exactly what it was.
Was it generous?
But it was a fair sum. Put it this way, I'm very rarely broke in Berlin, and also cigarettes we used to get an allowance for cigarettes. At that time I used to smoke, and we were allowed 140 cigarettes a week. That was our ration, and we had coupons for it, and we could only buy it in the Naffy. I'm trying to think how much they used to cost us now. It wasn't much, because it was because the coupons were actually in 140. That was what we were allowed. We weren't allowed any more. Of course, those guys who didn't smoke were on a winner, because you could go and buy their coupons.
And were these British brand cigarettes?
They were all British brands. If you wanted, I've tried the German brands. They were very strong, very, very strong. As I say, the Germans would always come up and ask you for cigarettes. Cigarettes, coffee.
So was it a thriving black market in these areas?
Yes, there was. But again, we were allowed small jars of coffee. I'm talking about the single squatties now. We weren't allowed, because again, that was on ration as well for the married personnel. But again, if people didn't drink coffee, a good black market in actually in Berlin itself.
What would be the exchange for these items? What were the Germans supplying for them?
They were buying it. They were buying offering marks. And it wasn't, the German shops were expensive at that time. So yes, if later on I met and married a German girl in Berlin, and I used to take presents to her parents when we were courting, coffee especially. And brandy, because again that was all rationed as well. If you wanted a bottle of, you used to go and say, "I'm going on leave. Can I have a?" Used to supply a Cuban. You used to get brandy, but again, I mean, you weren't allowed alcohol in barracks anyway, apart from in the naffy. So yeah, we. The married people living out, they were at a good winner, really, because they were, although they were on rations, how many people did they actually drink their rations? And yes, they were on a good little earner.
And you said, because the Germans were employed by you in the camps, and presumably even for money quarters, I suppose.
That's how I met my girlfriend, and who became my wife. She was employed as a cleaner for one of the Lance Corporals, Lance Corporal Lightfoot, who I got to know. He invited to his house and I used to do a little bit of babysitting for him, and that's how I met my future wife.
What was the state of Berlin? I mean, it had been devastated during the war. Were there still signs of that damage?
Yes, there were still signs of damage. Although I must admit, buildings were going up rapidly. They really were. And they've got a memorial in the middle of Berlin, and it's a church. I can't remember the exact name of the church, but it's a memorial, and it's been half built, but some of it has been, it was ruined. That was the last time. I don't know what it's like now, because it's a long time since I've been back to Berlin. I'm trying to persuade my wife now to go back to Berlin to have a look, because it's unfortunately my first marriage ended, and I remarried again, and I'm trying to persuade my present wife to go, and we'll have a long weekend and take her around Berlin, because it's a wonderful city, beautiful city, and I've never been back since it's been reunited. So I would like to go back. I know my son has, and he said there's a lot of changes.
Yes, there will be, I'm sure. What about the Berlin Wall? Was it there when you got there, or did it come afterwards?
We arrived in Berlin in the end of May. I think we were only there about 6 weeks. So I believe the Berlin Wall went up in August. And I remember the bugle being sounded, and we're all called out, and we'd only just got there and organised into our company, and which signals were which company and everything. And I can't exactly remember who was it. I think I was probably the RSO's radio operator. I think I was the RSO's, because I can't remember being with a company at that time. I think I was the regimental signals officer's signals operator. And I can't remember if it was DSA Rickards or whether Cyril Townsend had taken over. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, I was his operator, and we were called out. And what we had to do was get it, because our radios were never ever left in the vehicles. So we were called out, we had to get, the first thing we got was our weapons. Then we actually went down to the signal stores, we were dressed, our equipment was always packed. What they call our small pack equipment, spare clothing and everything else. Got the vehicles into the, radios into the vehicles. The battalion were actually issued, if I remember right, we were issued ammunition. And I thought, this hasn't been, I think it was probably our second call out. We'd had one practice, and then called out and we thought, this is for real. I can't remember if we were issued ammunition in the barracks or whether we got issued with the ammunition once to take up our positions. I can't remember. And if I remember rightly, we were in the field for about 3 days. Normally you were back in barracks within when we did our call out before, and afterwards we were back in barracks within about 6 hours of being called out. This time we stayed out, and then we were told what had happened, and we'd been told that the East Germans decided to, because there was that many people escaping from East Berlin to West Berlin, it had to stop. And we were later told that the Russians and the Americans at Checkpoint Charlie, although there'd been a Checkpoint Charlie all the time as a crossing point, the Russian tanks and the American tanks within 100 yards of each other, with rounds actually up the breach. It was that close. And after a while, everything quietened down, then the negotiations happened, and of course that was it. That was the duties then increased quite significantly, because at the time all we had was a guard, which was on the barracks, which was consisted of corporal, lance corporal, and 16 men, which as normal. Berlin Infantry Brigade headquarters, we had to supply a guard for that as well, because there was three battalions, infantry battalions, and we used to change it between the three infantry battalions.
Which three were those? Yourselves, of course.
At that time, we had the Welsh Regiment, and the other battalion there was the Green Jackets. I can't remember which battalions we were, but it was the Green Jackets, and they were in two barracks right next to each other in Spandau. And we had one squadron of tanks, and at that time it was the 4th Royal Tank Regiment. We had a small engineers unit, a normal brigade unit, engineers, Royal Army Service Corps, it was in those days, and they tend to be all based in Spandau. So we had those units, and then we had also, everybody used to volunteer for, was the train guard. It was a corporal and I think 3 men, and that was a train guard down into West Germany, and it was, you used to go on there, you would be given your orders, and we used to protect, or we were there. It wasn't a civilian train, it was a British military train. And the passengers could be military or military families. And you would get on the train and you have these little blocks, and you used to put it under the door handles. as soon as we got on, as soon as all the passengers were on, before we left Charlottenburg station, we would block all the doors off. All windows had to remain closed, and as soon as we left the station, we had to guard each carriage. I think we had two carriages apiece, and we used to actually count how many people we had on each carriage. And it became later on, I found out why we had to count all the passengers, because this happened to me. And I was doing a guard down into West Germany, and on the way back was similar. We used to stop at Potsdam and Marienburg. Although the Russians never used to get on and count the number of passengers we had, each person had an ID card given to a train commander who was a major, a sergeant major who was from the Royal Intelligence Corps. He used to be the Russian interpreter, and all passengers' dockings used to be checked, and we used to wander up the carriageway as a guard, and we actually had live ammunition as well. And we were told if anyone tried to get on, we had to shoot. And on the way back on this particular journey, we stopped at Marienburg. It was all checked, all the documentation, and I was wandering up in the two carriages I had, and everything was all right. Then we stopped at Potsdam, where there's the change of the trains. I went into one carriage, everything was all right. Came back into another carriage, and I had one more passenger than I should have had. What had happened is some squaddies had heard this knocking on the window, and remembering that there were Russian soldiers actually parading on the other side of the train, on both sides, so he must have been paid off, because they'd opened the window and they pulled this East German in through the window, not the Russian, but there's British squaddies that were on, and he was sat in there amongst them. So I said, who would have opened that? And these guys said, well, we did. So I said, don't open it again. And I had to report to the sergeant, well, the guard commander, who a guy called Joe Gregson, who I'll never forget him. He was my corporal, MT corporal in the signals. And reported to Joe. I said, we've got one more passenger than we should have. And Joe was quite a laid back character, and I remember him saying, what are you talking about, Steve? I said, we've got one more passenger. I said, it's an East German. And I remember him jumping up and said, oh my God. So he went to at that time he couldn't report to the RSM, the Sergeant Major, because he was out checking all the documents with the officer in the with the Russians. So when he came back on the train, I remember Corporal Gregson saying to the Sergeant Major, we've got one more passenger. And this guy had said, what do you mean? He says, a guy got in through a window. He said, well, all the windows are supposed to be closed. He said, yeah, he says, but some squaddies heard the knocking, opened the window and pulled this guy through.